We'll fade Stanley down here in the background. That's "Life Is Just a Game" from School Days, the album you had to have if, like me, you were a high school bass player. Stanley Clark on bass, going wild there. George Duke on keys, Billy Cobham on drums, and Icarus Johnson on guitar. And joining us now is Charles Johnson from Pajamas Media and Little Green Footballs. And good afternoon, Charles.
Going, David.
Ah, there you are. Sorry, turned up the wrong side. And thank you for being here.
I recognize that music.
I thought you might recognize that music. Were you in the studio doing live takes with those guys?
Yes, as a matter of fact, exactly what happened.
How did you keep your hands from shaking? That's some fast company.
It was pretty fast, yeah. Got faster all the time, too. That was actually my first recording session for any kind of real record.
How did you get tapped by Stanley Clark to do that one?
It happened because I just happened to know John McLaughlin, who also played on that record. And John, at that point, did not want to play electric guitar. And I had gotten him a demo tape of my stuff, and he liked it, and he recommended me to Stanley for the electric guitar.
And so you found yourself in a studio with George Duke and Billy Cobham.
Yeah. And Stanley Clark on my first real recording date. It was quite an experience. Yeah, it was very nervous making.
I can imagine it. Imagine it would be. George Duke's been getting a lot of play on the program this morning because I'm doing my annual Zappa special.
Uh huh.
So Mr. Duke keeps weaving in and out of the mix here.
Yeah, well, he was. I had moved on to play with George Duke after that record, about a year or so after I joined his band. That made the album Reach For It, and that was actually a gold record and very successful. So
some
that
heavy
was my next foray.
Yeah, some heavy stuff. So fast forward into the 21st century, and
mm-hmm.
You're now a do you consider yourself a web developer?
Well, I've always been involved in computers on some level. I originally bought an Atari computer when I was not touring on the road to play games on, and ended up learning to program it just because I like to tinker with stuff. it's not really that I consider myself a web developer now. It's just a kind of outgrowth of what I've always been into.
So you ended up developing a site called Little Green Footballs. How did that come about?
Well, Little Green Footballs was a site I put up originally to both promote my little web design consulting business and also to learn about the various technologies involved in blogging, because I was kind of fascinated by this new thing that was sort of exploding all over the place.
So when was this?
That would have been in 2001 was it was at the end of 2000 when I really put up the first version, but the one that's available now starts around 2001 February, I believe.
And if you go back in the archives, a lot of it is very much, you know, web design oriented, and
right.
not the huge conservative blog that it's known as being today. What happened?
Well, I still don't really think of it as a conservative blog, to be honest with you, although I get classed as that all the time. I think of it more as a sort of freewheeling place where people can just talk about a lot of stuff. And if you survey a bunch of my readers, I bet you'd find that a lot of them are not, they don't fit the classical definition of conservative necessarily. I think a lot of them may be more socially sort of liberal, but hawkish on foreign policy. So, but I think what really happened, what launched Little Green Footballs into the direction it is now, which is pretty much what I just described, it really does trace back to September 11. That was a big, an earth-shaking event in many, many ways.
Sort of like being mugged by reality?
I guess you could say that. Yeah, definitely. Although, you know, I think anyone who was paying attention in the years leading up to that event knew that something like this was eventually going to happen, so it wasn't a total surprise.
Now, your posts on the blog, you're not much of a writer. Some bloggers are really post essays time after time. You do shorter pieces that are quoting news clips from other sources, but you tend to have a couple of basic themes. One is the mainstream media, their coverage or lack of coverage, depending on the topic, and the other is what you call in your subject lines the religion of peace.
Yes.
And is that
because if we trace it back to September 11, we have to realize that the root of that was some form of Islam. We have to realize that. I mean, it was. That was motivation for what happened that day. So we have to. I'm disappointed that the media does not do its job of properly educating people about this.
Now, one of the things that your site is famous for is the throbbing memo, the famous throbbing memo. What was that?
The dreaded throbbing memo. This was the Dan Rather incident, which. As most people realize now, kind of led to a big shakeup at CBS News, and because they basically tried to foist off forged documents on the American public. And the throbbing memo was my little overlay illustration of the CBS-produced memo over a version of it that I typed into Microsoft Word in about 5 minutes without changing any default settings. And it happens to match almost exactly, and that's what you can see with this illustration.
So who got the story first? I know Free Republic spotted the the forgery about the same time you did.
I guess it started there. I didn't see that post at Free Republic. I saw the Powerline post a few hours later. And I was just intrigued by it. I didn't think there was anything, necessarily nefarious going on at that point, but they mentioned in their post that the documents were available on the CBS website, and so I said, well, that's interesting. I want to see what they look like. And the very instant I opened one of those documents, I knew this was not anything typed in 1973.
Didn't have that Selectric look to it.
It was so incredibly obvious. And so I've been involved in type design and layout work for many, many years, so it just jumped right off the page at me.
No, we saw the fallout from it. The throbbing memo made its appearance on Little Green Footballs. Within a fairly short matter of time, Dan Rather is out of a job. Basically, you think it was the blogosphere that brought down a major network anchor?
Well, that was not my intention. My intention was to expose a real. Something that was fake, and it was being foisted on the public at a time of an election. I thought that was incredibly insidious and needed to be stopped. So that was my main concern. I wasn't really trying to bring down Dan Rather. I know people think I have some kind of animus against him, but I don't. He just happened to be the one who presented this. That's how I see it.
Now, one of the things that your commenters on Little Green Footballs will say is that it's very much a fact-checking site, and that fact-checking is one of the primary roles of the blogosphere. Do you see it that way?
Yes, I do, and I think that's one of the real strengths of the blogosphere is its ability to draw on this almost sort of open-source knowledge base out there of people who are interested and just want things to get right, and there's almost a self-correcting quality about it.
What kind of changes have you seen in the blogosphere since you first got involved?
Oh, well, it's kind of exploded all over the place. You can see, if you look around the mainstream media sites these days, they all are adding blogs. So I think they're clutching at whatever might help them stay afloat in these increasingly troubled financial times for the media business.
Do you think the party is over for the mainstream media?
No. No, I'm not one of those people who thinks that the blogs are going to replace mainstream media anytime soon. I think what they can do is really complement it and act as a sort of a gadfly mechanism to make sure that they stay a little bit more honest.
Where do you see LGF in as far as carrying out that role? Are there we mentioned a couple of topics before. Is that primarily what you cover in terms of trying to keep the bring to light what's not in the mainstream media?
Yeah, and also to expose. I mean, there is really just a rampant bias in mainstream media, which is which needs to be seen by people, because people forget about it and they just start to absorb it, you know, almost subliminally, I think. But it needs to be pointed out over and over. And yeah, that's what really bothers me about mainstream media now, is this unacknowledged bias that masquerades as balance.
Can you give me an example of bias?
Well, almost anything you read in Reuters, for instance, about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is biased toward the Palestinians. Almost everything. And it's obvious why. It's because most of the stringers who write that stuff for them are Palestinians.
Now, on your site, you have very, very strong Israel supporters and... In your commenters, I know you don't regulate your commenters, a lot of actually nasty things said about the Palestinian Arabs. Does your site deserve the reputation of a hate site?
No, I don't think so, not at all. What it is a free speech site. Just to give you an example, there was someone who got onto my site last night who posted something that was incredibly hateful. It was basically an anti-Semite who snuck in to irritate people when I opened registration for a short period. And he left left a really nasty, ugly anti-Semitic comment. Now, I'm not going to allow that person to continue posting, but I'm going to leave the comment there as an example of why this person is not allowed to post anymore. So I see it more as a rough and tumble kind of free speech bar, I guess you could say.
If it is a free speech bar, why would you block a poster?
If they're ugly and anti-Semitic and hateful and racist, absolutely, I will block racist posters.
Would you consider some of the posters who post some of the more colorful things about Palestinians and Muslims and Arabs in general to be racists?
We don't get a lot of racist comments about Arabs. What we get is criticism of Islam, which is a religion. It's not a race. It's a lifestyle choice. It's not, you know, something you're born with. So, you know, there's obviously a fine line, and I can't read every comment. So sometimes there may be things left on there that I wish weren't. But like I say in my disclaimer, it's, you know, just the fact that they're left here does not mean that they're endorsed. And also, if you can go around the internet much and not be offended by something, you're doing better than I am. There's a lot of junk out there.
Very true, very
true. Much worse than you'll find on Little Green Footballs, I must just say.
Okay, well, let's fast forward now into the year 2005. A couple of major developments in the blog world. At the beginning of the year, we saw the launch of the Huffington Post.
Mm-hmm.
And then... at the end of the year, we've seen the launch of Pajamas Media.
Right.
So, what is PJ Media, and how does it differ from the Huffington Post? And what was
The Huffington Post, I think, is more an effort to get celebrities into blogging. If you look at their blog role and the people who post there, it's basically a big group blog of, you know, Larry David's wife and Barbara Streisand, whoever happens to be the celebrity of the moment. Pajamas Media is actually trying to draw on that same kind of populist blogosphere knowledge base. And we have some other stuff technologically in the wings that is currently being worked on that will help that to happen.
Now, you have actually a fairly wide variety. I think you surprised a lot of people when you introduced David Korn as one of your first associate bloggers.
Yeah, I'm sure we did. But, I mean, we just have this feeling that an echo chamber is not really all that interesting. You know, and we don't want to be just another National Review Online. We don't want to be just another Nation Online. We don't want to be either one, but we'd like to be able to have some interesting discussions with people who are rational and have things to contribute.
Yeah, now we've, in the past few weeks on this program, interviewed a couple of your, a couple of the PJ bloggers. We had Michelle Malkin on this morning. We had Atlas Shrugs on a few weeks ago. So who are some of the contributors to Pajamas?
Well, we have an awful lot of people. We've actually got something like 70 blogs who are signed up in our initial network. I could just pull up the list for you right now. I mean, you mentioned some of them, Michelle Malkin. Glenn Reynolds of Instapundit is one of our editorial board members. Hang on, let me pull that list up so I know what we're talking about here. We're trying to mix both mainstream media and bloggers, as a matter of fact.
Now, your launch was rather interesting. You had somebody from the New York Times actually, if I was trying to understand her comments, but it seemed like she was putting down bloggers while she was one of the...
Oh, Judith one of Miller? Yeah,
one of the keynote speakers. Yeah, Judith Miller, and you had, who's the other person from the Times? Elizabeth Haight, am I getting the name?
Oh, yeah, she was on that one. She's not actually from the New York Times, Elizabeth Haight. She has written pieces for them. I don't think she works full-time for them.
Now, is Judith Miller part of Pajamas Media?
No, she's not.
How did she get selected to be a speaker at the launch?
Well, because the issues that are at stake there are issues that I think are going to become more important to blogs as their reach becomes more. Because what she talked about is, you know, reporters' lines of integrity and you know, how far do you protect anonymous sources? How do you use them? Should you ever use them? You know, kind of the big questions that really anyone who pays attention to this stuff is going to have to be aware of.
Now, I just completely lost my train of thought as you were looking over the list of associated bloggers. Mm-hmm. One of the features that that run regularly on Pajamas Media is the Blog Jam.
Right,
which looks like, at least from where I sit, one of your biggest value-added products, mm-hmm. as someone in marketing might say. What is a blog jam?
Basically, it's like we choose a topic, and then we get some people who are some bloggers, maybe some mainstream media, maybe some not mainstream media, but even in some other field, like a politician or someone, to discuss an issue from the standpoint of you know, almost like a talk show, like a Sunday morning talk show, but using a blog method, posting comments back and forth.
And
it's
takes
actually
place
interesting because then you have an instant transcript of the
So it takes place in real time?
Yes, it takes place in real time, and it lasts for about 45 minutes, but then it's archived on the site, so you can go back and look at it. We had a very interesting one with some of the leaders of the UN's push to regulate the internet.
I saw that one. While we're on that topic, what do you make of that?
Oh, well, it's very troubling. Obviously, as Claudia Rosette wrote, you know, you don't want Robert Mugabe to be taxing your internet services or censoring you. And that's pretty much what's being proposed here, because nations like Zimbabwe and Cuba and China are some of the main proponents of this move. And what they're trying to do is to get control over what are called the Internet's root servers, which manage domain name services for the entire web.
Now, that would allow them to manipulate the content, wouldn't it?
Or well, it would allow them to... I mean, some nations, like Saudi Arabia, are already blocking Internet content. So what this would let the European Union and their friends in the United Nations do would be to basically have a lot more control over who gets domain names, control at a very basic level. So I'm not saying that they would micromanage blogs, for example, but it would make it much easier for those who did want to do that.
Now, what is the difference between a blog jam and a carnival?
A carnival, really, as I see it, is just a collection of links to blogs that are covering a certain topic. So they're similar in a way, but one is a discussion, one is a sort of a database of knowledge, I guess you could say.
So what do you see as the future of the blogosphere? Where is it going from here?
You know, I always I'm reluctant to give predictions because, like, I thought Michael Jackson's Bad was never going to go anywhere. So my predictions are always wrong. I prefer to just kind of ride the wave and see where it leads me.
Anything we can expect in the near future from Pajamas Media?
Yeah, we do have some stuff coming up that I can't really talk about yet because it's still under development. But there are some things in the works.
All right. We are speaking with Charles Johnson from Little Green Footballs and the technical director of...
That's what I'm called, the chief technical officer.
Of Pajamas Media.
And or janitorial service person.
Ah, okay. Reboot the server and clean up the bad links.
That's me.
And where would someone find Pajamas Media on the web?
You would find it at pajamasmedia.com.
Very intuitive.
Yes.
All right. Well, Charles, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us this morning, afternoon.
Thanks, David.
And happy blogging.
All right. Thanks
thank
to you,
you,
too.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. This is WPKN in Bridgeport, 89.5 FM and 88.7 WPKM Montauk. Let's get back to the Zappa.